If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56diva.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
Let's get started with some very important decisions that were rendered on Friday by our U.S. Supreme Court. They handed down two decisions. One narrows the power of the federal court to issue nationwide injunctions of executive orders and federal laws. The other is for parents to opt out of their elementary age children from instruction that includes LGBTQ themes. I'm going to go into detail on all of those, but both of these cases, I think, and I will be talking to my expert about it, have long-reaching effects going forward. With us to break down the court's decision is a friend of the show, Professor Ronald Allen. He's a distinguished professor at Northwestern University's School of Law, internationally recognized expert in, among other things, constitutional law. He's published 7 books, over 100 articles. He gets quoted in national news outlets. And we welcome you to the show. Welcome, Professor Allen. How are you?
I'm fine, Karen. How are you?
Thank you so much for joining us. These are so important, and I want to make sure that we all understand what these decisions mean. Let's start with the first one, the case involving birthright citizenship. And even though, to my knowledge, the court didn't really rule on whether birthright citizenship is part of our Constitution or not, can you explain to our listeners what birthright citizenship is, and if you believe it is part of our constitutional constitutional rights?
Yeah, so the 14th Amendment to the Constitution was passed in part to overturn the Dred Scott case. The Dred Scott case was a terrible decision by the Supreme Court holding that people of African descent are not citizens of the United States. And the 14th Amendment was passed to change that, but did so in general language. It says all persons born or naturalized in the United States, and this is critical, and subject to the jurisdiction thereof, are citizens of the United States. Now, that seems to me to read, and by the way, I must say I found the executive order that we'll talk about in just a second, it came out of nowhere from my point of view, seems to say if you're born within the territorial integrity of the United States, you are automatically an American citizen. So what Trump did is he issued an executive order saying that's true if but only if you are legitimately in the country. So if you're not legitimately in the country, you're not a naturalized citizen or a legal resident or on a green card, if neither mother nor father are citizens nor here legally, you are not a citizen of the United States. Carving out an exception to this so-called birthright right. Now, do you want me to?
Yes, just tell me
my appraisal of what I think is going to happen here.
Yes, yeah, because the decision, am I correct that the decision that came down on Friday didn't address that squarely as to whether or not that was an appropriate and a constitutional carve-out, right?
Right.
Okay.
No,
so,
it did not.
Okay.
Actually,
so, go ahead.
The dissent raised various issues about it, but the majority paid no attention to it whatsoever.
Tell me what you think of the idea that this executive order is constitutional or not constitutional based upon your reading.
Yeah. So as I said a second ago, I was surprised when this order came down because me, like just about everybody else, just naturally assumed that birthright citizenship was what the 14th Amendment adopted. There are two problems. One is this language subject to the jurisdiction thereof, and the other, it turns out, is an old Supreme Court case by the name of United States versus Wong Kim Ark. Where the Supreme Court seemed to imply that Trump got it right, and it didn't deal with Trump, obviously, it was an 1898 case, but actually said a child born to a person legitimately in the United States who's legally domiciled there and working is a citizen of the United States. Now, the implication is, if those aren't true, you're not a citizen. So, who knows? Secondly, We haven't heard from the originalists yet about what kind of data they might present as to what the original meaning of this is. My guess is that Trump will lose. That's if I had to guess. But he might lose in an interesting way. The fifth section of the 14th Amendment empowers Congress to enforce the 14th Amendment with appropriate statutes. So the court could easily say and get out of a real bind, actually. We don't decide whether the president has the power to do this. If anyone has the power to do this, it would reside in Congress. So my guess is that will be, and this is a wild guess, my guess is that's the tack that they will take.
Okay, so that hasn't been addressed. And when we come back, I want to talk about what this decision does address and how important it is going forward. And then we're going to be talking about the school opt-out provision. If your child is in school, elementary school, you will have a right as a parent to opt out of certain LGBTQ materials. We are talking right now to Professor Ronald Allen. We're talking about the birthright citizenship case. We talked a little bit about what the case is not about, but what did the case say? And let's keep this very simple, because even though it's complicated, I think it makes it's a very important case in how things are going to move going forward.
So yeah, the second part of the case, which is the only part of the case that the government appealed to the Supreme Court, which is why they didn't get into the birthright citizenship question, it is the power of a federal district court to enter a nationwide injunction. Now, normally a court has jurisdiction over the parties in front of it, and if a party is not in front of it, you don't have jurisdiction over that person or any case involving that person. What the lower courts were saying, what the district courts were saying, is no, they can enter a nationwide injunction, and it binds the government across the entire country, no matter who the parties are. The Supreme Court said, and by the way, I think they're right, that this was simply made up by the district courts, and it's an inappropriate exercise of authority, interfering with the executive power of the presidency. So that means that if there's a case, like a particular person claims that they cannot be said to be a non-citizen, you can get a ruling, and that ruling binds the government with respect to that person, but it doesn't bind the government with respect to any other person.
Okay, so let's just say, and it's just an example that is kind of going on right now, where states are trying to tell schools that they have to have the Ten Commandments in their classroom. Let's just say it's Tennessee that says that. And say little Johnny goes to court and his mom objects to the Ten Commandments, and the court there says, that is unconstitutional. That is a violation of our First Amendment separation of church and state, and strikes down the law. Okay, so the law is stricken down. What does that mean for the little Johnnies in other states under this rule, under this new constitutional, and under this new Supreme Court case? Does that mean that everyone in every state is going to have to bring those lawsuits in order to strike down the laws?
So just... I know you want to keep this simple, but you're mixing and matching two different questions.
Okay.
One is a universal injunction. In your hypothetical, you'd have to have the district court in Tennessee, is that the state that you use?
Yes.
Issue an injunction enjoining all the other states from doing the same thing. That's different from a court reaching an opinion on the constitutionality of a statute. That would have no effect in any other circuit or any other state except what we call persuasive effect. Once the Supreme Court is heard, well, then that's the law, and everybody has to follow it. But one circuit or one state is not required to follow what happens in another circuit or another state. After all, the first court to make this decision might be wrong. This is not a case where the issue is the executive or some institution going to be allowed to get away with wrongdoing. That assumes that the first decision is correct, and it may not be.
Got it. So this is more limited than what I have been thinking it is. It means that the courts are going to be ruling on all of these issues, the executive orders and the like. Now, do you think, but they're not going to have the ability to enjoin people in Alaska from from enforcing those laws. Do you think it's going to change the way certain plaintiffs bring their cases? Meaning, Will they now start bringing class action suits, which have, you know, a number of people in their class and have larger ramifications for the people, since they are going to be have jurisdiction over the class members? Do you see that happening?
That's exactly what's going to happen. A class action is not a perfect substitute for a nationwide injunction, but it has similar attributes in that anybody joined to it is within the jurisdiction of the court, and the holding of the court would apply to them. Why you might think, why then are we bothering with this? If there's just an easy substitute that's going to get to exactly the same result. Well, the reason is that although class actions have that similarity, they are actually also much different from the dynamic of a single case followed by a nationwide injunction. The standards for showing that a class is appropriate, you can't just say, I want a class action of everybody who might be deported. You actually have to show a whole bunch of things, including common question of law or fact. So, and these things, that is the class certification, that's what it's called, the judge would certify a class, is subject to immediate appeal. So before you get into the merits. So this is going to be much more difficult, much more difficult, and certainly more costly and time-consuming for the plaintiffs, which from the administration's point of view is fine, right, because they want to keep doing what they're doing. So, yes, that's exactly what's going to happen.
I was going to
give you a little detail. There's some possibility of a nationwide injunction if that's the only way to give the plaintiff in front of the court what's called a complete recovery. But that is a theoretical possibility that the court discusses in the case, but it's never going to happen.
And this goes both ways to all administrations. So if we have a Democratic president who's issuing executive orders, I mean, the same thing is going to apply. So as much as maybe we do or don't like this decision, it's going to be, according to the Supreme Court, the law of the land, no matter who's issuing those executive orders or who's passing those federal laws. Right.
That's exactly right. And the federal district courts have brought this on themselves. They are in five quite liberal jurisdictions in front of 92% judges who were appointed by Democrats. They are essentially trying to regulate the executive power of the United States. They should not have done this. But having done it, they're now reaping what they have sown, which is a slap down by the Supreme Court of the United States.
Let's talk about the other decision that I would like to address today, which is the case of the school case coming out of Maryland. Can you set up the facts for us, Professor Allen?
Sure. So the Maryland Montgomery County, which is a big, sprawling county with a highly diverse population, wanted to introduce, can I use the term woke, because that's essentially what it is, woke
sure.
materials. Extolling the virtues of lesbian, bi, gay, queer, trans, binary people, and realizing the sensitivity of that, they allowed parents to opt out. Parents opted out in droves. Because of that, the school said, well, you can't opt out anymore, and we're not even going to give you notice when these materials are going to be discussed in class. A number of plaintiffs sued on the ground that the material that they were promoting, and by the way, it was indoctrination, it was promoting a particular point of view, violated their religious precepts. And the court found, all the courts found, that these were sincerely held. Both Muslims and Catholic, for example, sincerely held the belief that sex and gender is determined by God. It's divine. It's a part of divinity, and it's designed to procreate in the image of God. Now, you may or may not agree with that, but these are religiously held, sincerely held religious beliefs. Now, a parent has a right, or at least we now know for sure that they have had a right. If we had any doubts about it, now we know for sure, to bring up their children in their own religion. And so the question was whether this violated that right, whether the refusal of the state to let the parents know and to let their children opt out of these proselytizing lessons about things inconsistent with their religion violated their right to free exercise of religion, including, and that's what is interesting about the case, the right to bring up your children in your own faith. And the court held that it did.
So where does the line get drawn? Because as you say, and I don't know the facts of the case, I'll take your word for it that this is proselytizing and that it's basically, are you telling me that the materials are telling kids they should be gay? That doesn't sound right to me. But if that's the case, let's just take something that's less woke, in your words, which I don't think is such a bad word because I'd like to be woke. but the idea,
I wasn't editorializing.
My favorite book, Jane Eyre, has themes of infidelity. So could a parent say, under this case, could a parent say, listen, my seventh grader is reading Jane Eyre and I don't like the fact that there is infidelity, which is against my religion, and I think that that's promotional of something that I find offensive from a religious standpoint. Is that something, how would that then get decided?
The trouble here, Karen, is the Constitution and these different doctrines don't come to us like the tax code with all kinds of different provisions that tell us exactly what to do. It's all dependent on the facts. How can come down? My guess is that schools would allow a parent under those circumstances to opt out, especially given this opinion, and it'll never get to court. By the way, the school wasn't telling people to be gay, but these materials, and you can read them in the opinion, actually, they're in the opinion, were inculcating that kind of attitude. And for example, the teachers were told to tell a student who might say something like, gosh, this is inconsistent with my religion, to actually say to that person, that's hurtful and you shouldn't say that.